Hello everyone, so I'm going to present my work on the security of Wi-Fi group keys. So what are Wi-Fi group keys? Well, these are the keys that are used to encrypt broadcast on multicast Wi-Fi frames. And these keys are of course shared by all clients in a wireless network. The reason why we did this work is because we noticed that these group keys have not yet been properly investigated. And this in contrast with the pre-shared key of a network or the negotiated pairwise keys. So what we did in our work is we more investigated in detail the security of these group keys during their full lifetime. Now, what do I mean with their full lifetime? That means that we first investigate how these group keys are generated. And we found that the construction that is used to generate these keys is not ideal. And we also found that the Wi-Fi standard, so Ethernet 2.11, contains a bad random number generator. Of course, this group key also has to be transported to clients that join the network. And this group key is transported to clients during the four-way handshake. And we found a way to force encryption force usage of RC4 to encrypt the group key while it is being transported to a client that is trying to connect. And we're going to show how this attack works. And with the group key, you can of course decrypt and inject broadcast frames, but we also devised a method to inject unicast traffic, and we also found and will present a way how we can use the group key to decrypt nearly all traffic of a network, including unicast traffic. And we also have a small proposal for a better random number generator specifically for Wi-Fi platforms. So let's start with the first part. How is the group key in a wireless network generated? Well, the Ethernet 2.11 standard proposes, but does not mandate, a group key hierarchy, which basically says how you can generate the group key. And of course, the group key is always generated by the access point and then transported to clients. So what the standard suggests that you should do is that you should randomly generate two values. I called them the public counter and the private master key. So this public counter is assumed to be known to attacker, but the master key must remain secret. And these two values are then used to derived group keys. So how is that done? Well, it's quite simple. You increase the public counter by one. You then combine it with the master key using a pseudo-random function. And the output of this function is the temporal group key. So just to be clear, the group key is abbreviated to GTK. And this construction allows you to periodically generate a new group key, for example, every hour by simply increasing this public counter. However, there is one big disadvantage with this construction, and that's that these two values are randomly generated only at boot. And that means that as your access point keeps on running, no new entropy is introduced to generate this group key. In other words, if for some reason this master key here leaks, an attacker can calculate all past and future group keys that are used by the Wi-Fi network. And that is, of course, not something that you want, because if this random number generator that is used to generate these values is weak, then we could try to recover these values and in turn recover all group keys. So let's see whether the random number generator is actually secure or not. Now, interestingly, the 802.11 standard, so Wi-Fi, contains an example random number generator. And when you are reading the specification itself, there are references in the text that state, if you need cryptographic quality randomness, then you can implement the random number generator that is contained in the appendix of the standard. So if you read that line, it sounds good. I mean, you have a random number generator, it's supposed to be cryptographic quality. But if you then actually go to the appendix of the standard, you immediately encounter a very different tone. It says, yeah, this algorithm is an example only. You're supposed to extend it with other sources of entropy. This is basically just to show that you can collect some amount of entropy. So in other words, the standard is not consistent with itself, at least in my opinion. In some cases, it says that this random number generator is good, but if you look at the algorithm, it says this is just an example, you're supposed to extend and improve it. So now the question is, how secure is this example random number generator, and do people actually implement it? So if we look at the, if you look in this appendix and we look at the random number generator, you indeed see that it's quite quickly thrown together. The description is not that formal. And basically, the random number generator that they propose, that they give as an example, is just a stateless function that returns 32 supposedly random bytes. And the entropy that is used to generate the 32 bytes is collected on demand. So when this random number generator is being called, only then are events being sampled and used to extract randomness. And the events that are used here are frame arrival times and clock jitter. So those are the sources of entropy. So if you see this, you should be quite concerned because this deviates from the normal construction of a random number generator, where your random number generating is random number generator is maintaining a pool of entropy, which is constantly updated and receded. And normally, you also constantly collect entropy from events and not just when you call your random number generator. So let's go in detail about the entropy sources that are used, so these frame arrival times and the clock jitter. So the standard says that you can collect the arrival times of Ethernet packets, but of course, an access point may not always be connected to a backbone Ethernet network. So the second option it provides is that you can try to repeatedly initiate the four-way handshake and then collect entropy from the arrival time of frames. Now, this is a very strange suggestion by the Wi-Fi standard because initiating this handshake is only possible when a client is trying to connect, or you would have to disconnect the client so he would reconnect. So it's very strange that they propose this because it's also very slow. But a more important problem is that if you would indeed constantly try to initiate this handshake and then abort it, your client would simply blacklist this access point. For example, if your phone is constantly trying to connect to a network but it repeatedly loses the connection, it won't try to reconnect again. So if you would use this approach, the access point would essentially DOS itself. So that's not a good idea. So the second suggestion that was provided to collect entropy was to use the clock jitter. So to essentially constantly query what time is it and collect entropy from that. Now, a first small note here, it's not that important, is that the current time of a router can be leaked through the beacons. So as an attacker, we know how long the router is running. Now, this is not really a concern if you want to base yourself on clock jitter, because knowing the uptime is not really sufficient to predict the amount of jitter. However, what is a problem is that the Wi-Fi standard doesn't mandate a minimum resolution for the clock that is being used. So it could be that if you are constantly trying to get the current time, you repeatedly get the same result and you aren't really collecting that much entropy. So when I read this standard, I think it was around a year ago or two, I encountered this random number generator, but I thought that no one would implement this. A year later, I encountered some source code where, surprisingly, someone did implement this. Then I decided to investigate this in more detail. So what's surprising here is that, for example, MediaTek, they almost exactly implement this random number generator, but they only collect randomness from the clock jitter. And Broadcom also has a custom random number generator. It doesn't resemble the random number generator provided by Wi-Fi that much, but it still also uses clock jitter. So I'm going to focus on the random number generator that is used by MediaTek, because it resembles this supposedly official random number generator a lot. So to briefly summarize, MediaTek almost exactly implements this random number generator, but it only uses a clock jitter as a source of entropy. And what is more problematic is that the timestamp that it tries to collect is the so-called Jiffy's counter of the Linux kernel. Now, the time, the time resolution of this Jiffy's counter is very low. At best, it has accuracy of around a few of millisecond accuracy, which means that if you would repeatedly try to query the amount of Jiffy's that have been passed, you would constantly get the same value, and there is not much variation, so you also won't be collecting that much entropy. So one example router that implements this algorithm is the one illustrated here. And we tried to break the random number generator of this device by predicting the group key. So how did we do that? Well, we still need to be fast enough to explore all the possible candidates for the group key. So essentially, we made an OpenCL program that we can run on a GPU. And even on a very standard GPU, for example, the one in my laptop here, it's not a, it's a decent GPU, but definitely not a, a high-end one. If we then capture some traffic of the network, and then if we then try to search for the group key by trying to decrypt a broadcast or multicast frame, it takes around 3 to 4 minutes to obtain the group key and, in a sense, to break the random number generator. And the result of this attack is not just the current group key, but we are also able to recover this master key. Now, the explanation is a bit simplified here, but essentially, once we also have this master key, it is trivial to predict the next group key that will be generated. So the first time we perform this attack, it takes about 3 to 4 minutes, but if the access point then generates a new group key, we can predict and guess that one very fast. So the other example here of Broadcom, we were also able to implement an algorithm on the GPU where it took around 4 to 5 minutes to predict this group key. So the conclusion here is that this random number generator is indeed quite bad. So for the second part, we investigated how this group key is transported to clients that are trying to connect to the network. So this is done using the four-way handshake. So let's briefly illustrate this using a simplified illustration of the handshake. So when you're trying to connect to a network, what a client does is you listen for beacons, you detect which ciphers this network supports, you select a cipher you want to use, and then you tell the access point, hey, I want to connect using this cipher. Then you initiate the first part of the actual four-way group, four-way handshake, where the first two messages are essentially nonsense, which are used to negotiate session keys. So here the PT key, here is the session key. Once we have agreed on these session keys, we can continue the four-way handshake. And the first thing that the access point does, it sends the list of available ciphers that it supports in a secure manner. So these information elements here contain the list of ciphers that the access point supports in a secure manner, so the attacker is not able to mess with these information elements. So once the client has received the list of supported cipher suites, it can compare it with the cipher suites that are contained in the beacon in order to try to detect a downgrade attack. For example, if there was a man in the middle that said the access point only supported an old cipher, that downgrade attack will be detected here. So what's the problem with this approach? Is that this message tree also contains the group key in an encrypted form. In other words, it is sending and encrypting the group key before a possible downgrade attack is detected. So as an attacker, we can abuse this. We can construct, of course, now it's important whether a weak cipher can be used to encrypt this group key or not. So how does the standard decide which cipher is being used to encrypt this group key here? Well, if your selected cipher is WPA TKIP, then this here will be encrypted using RC4. if your pairwise cipher is AES, then the group key will be encrypted using AES as well. And of course, the problem here is RC4. So how can we mount an attack against this? Well, essentially, we will put up a rogue access point where instead of listing all the supported ciphers of this access point, we will pretend that this access point only supports WPA TKIP. The client is then forced to use this cipher suite. So it will say to the access point, okay, I want to connect to you using WPA TKIP. The rest of the handshake here will continue as normal, but now the group key will be encrypted using RC4 because the client here requested WPA TKIP. And this downgrade attack is only detected after the group key has been encrypted using this weak cipher. So now we can try to attack RC4 in this setting. Now, I'm not going to go into details here. Essentially, the RC4 key that is used to encrypt the group key is the concatenation of a 16-byte public initialization vector together with a 16-byte session key. And interestingly, the first 256 keystream bytes are dropped. Now, we can use existing attacks against RC4 modified to essentially work in this situation. And one of the best attacks we can come up with is, in a sense, similar to the attacks that were used against SSL and TLS, where we try to decrypt a secret that is repeatedly included in a message. So essentially, this means that as an attacker, if I am able to generate 2^31 handshakes, which all include the same group key, then I am able to recover this group key. However, the problem with this attack is that it takes a lot of time to simply execute one handshake and to capture one encryption of the group key. So assuming we can, as an attacker, force a client to perform one handshake every second, this would take more than 50 years to execute. So it is not a practical attack. However, it does show that we should definitely avoid RC4 here, because if someone comes up with an even better attack or is able to collect these handshakes faster, then this could turn into a practical attack. So what are the countermeasures? The first is to disable WPA TKIP and RC4, then you avoid this altogether. However, another important remark is that in the handshake, we were sending secret data, in this case the group key, before we prevented and tried to detect downgrade attacks. So another way to defend against this is to first execute the handshake and not yet include the group key in this handshake, but only send the group key after the handshake has been completed. And this is perfectly possible in a backward compatible manner. So in other words, we are able to force usage of RC4 and in theory, we can then decrypt the group key. So the third part of our attacks is that we are going to abuse this group key to try to decrypt unicast packets and to inject unicast packets as well. So let's say we have a wireless network, we have our access point here and a victim here. And let's assume that we as an attacker know the group key, for example, by brute forcing it and exploiting this bad random number generator, then an initial idea might be to simply encapsulate a unicast IP packet in a multicast or broadcast Wi-Fi frame. However, this is not possible. This is detected by the so-called Hall 196 check. So a few years ago at DEF CON, the Hall 196 attack was demonstrated on basically they proposed this attack scenario, where if you have a group key, you could inject unicast packets in a broadcast Wi-Fi frame. However, most systems now try to detect this. They try to detect whether a unicast IP packet was received in a broadcast link layer address, and if that's the case, they drop this packet. However, this detection can only be implemented by a device which actually processes these IP packets. So our insight here is that if you have an access point, it only works at the link layer and not at the network layer. In other words, it doesn't know anything about IP or any protocol above it. And we can now abuse the access point in order to inject a unicast packet. So how does this work? Well, we have our attacker here. It will encapsulate the IP packet, which is represented by the data here, inside a broadcast packet. And it will encrypt this packet using the group key, and it will then send this broadcast packet towards the access point. So here the access point is the receiver of this packet. However, the final destination of the packet will be our victim. So when the access point receives this packet, it will simply decrypt it, it will process it, and it will then forward the frame to its final destination. And let's assume that the final destination now is the victim. Well, it has this normal IP packet here. It simply encrypts it now using the pairwise key that was negotiated between the access point and the victim. The destination address is now simply a unicast MAC address. In other words, the victim sees a very normal unicast Wi-Fi frame, which is encrypted using the correct key, and it contains a unicast IP packet. So to summarize this slide, basically we can inject unicast IP packets using the group key by abusing the access point to forward it to the victim. So we can now inject unicast packets. So how are we able to decrypt most of the other traffic? Well, the idea is very simple. We simply ARP poison all the other stations to the broadcast MAC address. So if the router now wants to send a packet to a client, it will look up the MAC address of this client, which is now the broadcast MAC address, and it will send this data as a broadcast Wi-Fi frame, meaning it's encrypted using the group key. And since it is encrypted using the group key, we can simply decrypt this frame. So we can target IPv4, IPv6, and so on, using a method similar to our poisoning. So the countermeasure against this attack is that the access point simply should never process frames that are received on a group or that are received on a broadcast or multicast MAC address, because clients shouldn't be sending broadcast or multicast packets themselves. It's always the access point that sends broadcast frames, because that also assures that all connected clients will receive these broadcast messages. So that concludes most of our attacks. The final thing that we did, it's the more smaller contribution, is that we proposed a random number generator that is designed specifically for Wi-Fi platforms. And our idea is essentially that, well, if you want to generate random numbers on a Wi-Fi platform, you have access to the antenna of the Wi-Fi chip. So why not simply use the physical background noise of the Wi-Fi channel? And it turns out that commodity chips can generate a very large amount of signal strength measurements per second. And this is done using a so-called spectral scan feature. You can see an illustration of this feature here. Essentially, you can generate a huge amount of measurements per second. And we process all these measurements in the firmware of the Wi-Fi chip by just XORing these samples together. So let's say we can XOR 1,000 measurements together in the firmware. This can be done very fast and normally also doesn't require that much energy. The result of these this XORed sample is then passed on to the operating system, which can use an existing and proper method to manage this entropy and randomness. So we proposed this method. However, there is still some future work to be performed here. For example, we did not yet investigate how well this random number generator would perform if there is, for example, a jammer present. So that is still something to be investigated. So that leads me to the conclusion of our work. So basically, I'm going to discuss four lessons that we learned. The first two are rather practical. That's that you should use a proper random number generator. And the second one is the countermeasure, that an access point should ignore group addressed Wi-Fi frames. The next two lessons are a bit more broad. The first one is that you shouldn't put an example algorithm, especially an example security algorithm, in an official specification. If you include an algorithm in a specification, it should either be decent or it should not be in there. Don't include something that's in between or where you say that you should be extending this, because people will simply implement it like it's implemented in the specification. The second observation is that you shouldn't transmit sensitive data, for example, the group key, before your handshake or protocol is trying to detect downgrade attacks against this protocol. So that concludes my talk. If there are any questions, feel free to ask.
Okay, so I have one question. So did you also collaborate with MediaTek and the vendors to actually implement those countermeasures you proposed?
Not yet. I am planning to report this bad random number generator to them, so they should instead simply use the random number generator of Linux, and then they should be fine. So we still have to report these vulnerabilities.
Please do.
So Warren Kamari, Google. There's some work in the IETF now on opportunistic wireless encryption, which uses Diffie-Hellman to derive the PMK. So between the AP and the client, there's Diffie-Hellman, and it generates the PMK from that. Mm-hmm. And I think that it changes the four-way handshake enough that this doesn't work anymore. Have you looked at that at all? Do you know if it does actually mitigate this?
So I haven't looked at that in detail, but I would guess that this opportunistic encryption would be used to negotiate session keys, so pairwise keys between clients on access points. However, the group key might still just be generated by the access point, so you can still be using a bad random number generator there. Because the pairwise keys between access point and client, they are generated using the method you set, but the group key is simply generated by the access point.
Okay, let's thank the speaker.